Welcome to episode 36 of Conversation Street, the only podcast dedicated to the British Soap Institution, Coronation Street. I'm Gemma.
I'm Michael.
And this week we'll be discussing the episodes broadcast in the UK between the 1st and the 5th of April 2013.
Yeah, it's spring now.
Can you tell
from the snow in the air.
Yeah.
Oh, so it has been a week of departures this week. We've had to say goodbye to two much-loved characters. Well, one. But if we look back at the Corrie history annals, it was a week of arrivals. If we look back 35 years ago, that was when we first saw Ida Clough, who was one of the factory ladies. She was kind of, you know how there's always somebody in the factory that never really has a storyline, but she's kind of there as a background character, like a Kelly Crabtree kind of person. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was kind of like her, but a bit older. We also had 20 years ago, Maud Grimes first wheeled onto the scene, which was Maureen's mum. She was an awesome character. And then 15 years since Greg Kelly, who was a bit of a baddie for a little bit. He was Les Battersby's long-lost son who came and caused a bit of trouble, including holding Sally hostage and things. So
dreadful business.
So that is it for Corrie history this week. Let's get on with some street talk.
Street talk, yay!
Don't sound too excited. It's not been that bad a week, has it? I thought it's been quite good. You're tired.
So we've had five major storylines this week.
Mm-hmm.
The Rovers returns. Domestic abuse for the final time.
Yeah, I think this is the last week that we can possibly get away with describing this storyline as the domestic abuse.
Right, good. High tea at Roy's Rolls again. Mm-hmm. Surrogacy. Gary begs for sex. Which will make more sense when you hear.
He begs Tina for sex.
And
this is a rubbish name.
Shaw is grim at the Grimshaws.
Yeah.
What?
Could have said it's poo at Paul's. But there are non-British viewers when they've got that reference.
No, if you want to know, you can always ask us.
Yeah, or you just Google search poo at Paul's.
You won't be disappointed.
So.
Okay.
Yeah, so for the Rovers reburns, we've kind of included everything, including Stella and Jason and Carl and Sunita and Dev. It's been
all the consequences of the fire are included.
Indeed. Yeah, well, Stella was just getting ready to get discharged at the beginning of the week, wasn't she? She's had enough of being in hospital. But she doesn't believe that Sunita's guilty at this point.
Well, Gloria and Eva firmly do.
Yeah.
Because they're like the three witches, but Stella's like the good witch.
Because Witch of the North.
Yeah.
Got the accent and everything.
Jason wants them to chuck Carl out, but they won't. And really... You could repeat that for the rest of the week.
Yeah, that is what Jason did this week, wasn't he?
He complained about Carl, which is what he, you know, good for him. Yeah. So, Dev, meanwhile, is still telling the children that Sunita's sleeping.
Yeah.
He doesn't really want them to go and see her.
It took him a long time to admit to them that anything was wrong. And in fact, it was after she died that she even
spoil it.
As far as the children knew, she was just sleeping all week and they were still looking forward to giving her their card and stuff.
I know, all the effort they went to.
So he's had some people come over
to look after the kids.
Lloyd and Mandy, I think. If Marcus and Maria got sick of the children or something
probably
at this point.
So he can't understand why Sunita's being accused of setting the Rovers fire. And he just wants things to be normal. So they look after the kids, and so he can go and sit by Sunita.
Yeah.
Sophie and Jenna are in there in another scene.
Yeah, Sophie seems to be firmly in this storyline now, doesn't she?
Well, it seems like they've decided that she's the only friend that Dev has got, even though they remembered at the end of the week, he's friends with Steve.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have a close friend, really.
No, Sophie's just being kind of the compassionate one this week, isn't she?
Well, I'm glad that they are keeping this idea that she's got this kind of Christian kind of ethos driving her.
She doesn't really have anyone else to have a storyline with at the moment,
well,
to be fair,
Jenna.
Does she?
Jenna and Sophie sit with Sunita, and Sophie says, "Do you mind if I say a prayer?"
Yeah.
So they both sort of bow their heads. But I wonder whether Jenna shares her beliefs. Maybe that will be a storyline that will flare up later. I don't know. I
can't wait for that.
So Stella and company are home at number 13 and Jason and Carl are fighting over looking after Stella. Because they both want to show that they're Stella's man, I think. It's kind of like the next step up from peeing on her is to make her a coffee or something.
Stella obviously hasn't chosen at this point either, has she? She's definitely seen to have been working her way back towards Carl.
She just won't tell Carl where to go, which is really frustrating to watch.
Yeah, but it worked in the end, though, for Carl, didn't it?
Carl's just
got his
so
girl
pathetic.
In the end of the week.
So Stella comes over and Stella tells her to thank Kevin for letting them stay in the house.
Yeah, she can't thank Kevin herself.
She'll convey that to Kevin off screen and Kevin will pass the message back.
He'll say, you're welcome off screen.
Yeah. So Stella's looking at the rovers outside. She does that quite a few times during the week.
Yeah.
And Tina comes up and they have a little hug because obviously Tina's used to be the barmaid. So now she's unemployed. Stella's asking if she's all right for money and stuff.
Yeah.
And when Carl comes over, she says, I never thought it'd hurt this much. That's a better accent than hers. And he says, I blame myself. I wish I'd never met Sunita on the stairs. And he wishes he could change things, which is all empty words from the evil arsonist.
He's just offering a shoulder to cry on all week.
Yeah, exactly.
She's falling for
it. I just feel like it's partly driven by guilt.
Yeah.
Like, he's not just manipulating her, he does feel bad about...
He definitely feels bad about it, you can see by the sound of his looks to himself.
His little to the camera grimaces.
Yeah.
So, over at the hospital, the doctor's telling Dev there's been no change and they're doing what they can, and he's saying, the kids need their mother back, so that makes a difference.
Yeah, and the children still don't know what's going on. They're with Lloyd and Mandy at the cafe, blissfully unaware of what's happening. Asha's been writing in her diary for Sunita.
No one cares what Ardy's been up to.
No.
All week long, all the way through the storyline, Ardy's been completely snubbed.
He has.
He's like the demon child.
So later on, over at number 13, Carl is doing some very impressive one-handed hoovering because he's got his all bandaged up in there this week. And then Gloria comes and says that, to celebrate them coming out, she'll take them all out to tea. But Stella can't do it because she can't drink at the moment. And all week long, she's been moaning that she can't drink. And she can't even possibly go out for a meal without... Because the temptation of booze will be too much for her.
Every scene she's in, she has to mention. It just goes to show you what alcoholics they are on this programme. That every single time they do anything sociable, it has to involve alcohol. And she has to remind them, I can't drink, remember?
She is a landlady. She's probably
Yeah, but she doesn't have a pub
secretly
anymore.
Secretly addicted to it. She probably needs the alcohol fumes.
Oh, maybe, yeah. So they go off. Gloria and Eva go off without them.
Yeah, and I think when that happens, I kind of guess that something might happen between Carl and Stella while they are out.
Carl runs a bath for her, and she starts crying, and he comforts her. And he says, this has taught me how much you mean to me. I've never stopped loving you. That's my Carl impression. And then they have a kiss. And they're still kissing when Jason knocks on the door to take Stella out for a meal. God, she can't move for offers, can she? Wish people would be knocking down the door to take me out for dinner.
Yeah, but Carl says that Stella's not up to it, but she actually says that she will go, so she goes and gets ready. Do you think that she regretted that little moment of madness?
Yeah, I think that you're supposed to infer that from the fact that she doesn't tell Jason to go away.
Yeah.
She's still battling with herself.
Yeah, she needs rescuing from herself.
So in the bistro, Jason's having a go at Stella about letting Carl hang about, and he wants him chucked out. And he's got a bedsit to go to, which is a perfectly reasonable thing to point out. I mean, Stella and her family are the ones that are homeless. Why is Carl living with them?
Yeah, because Gloria offered.
Exactly. They have an argument and Jason ends up marching off.
Yeah, yeah. Back over at the hospital again, Dev's still harping on about Sunita to the doctor. Oh, my beautiful Sunita. What's going to happen to my Sunita? Is she not getting better? And the doctor's like, just go home.
Go away.
Go away, you're annoying me. Go home and recharge. Go and have a rest. Go and enjoy the bank holiday with the kids. And they say that they'll call if there's any change. We later then cuts to Carl seeing Jason leaving the bistro. And then he kind of sneaks in behind him and has a nice little cosy evening with Stella there.
Well, she tells him she's confused. And Carl says, that she's wondering whether she wants to get back with him, and he loves her and he'll do anything for her.
Mm-hmm. We also see Dev. Oh, when Dev gets home. No.
No. Dev goes into the shop and Mary and Norris are there moaning about Sunita to Sophie.
Yeah.
And he gets really mad, kicks them out. And as he's coming out of the shop after that, he gets a phone call.
And says, what?
Well, what? So as he's rushing off to the hospital, Carl and Stella are admiring the CG stars.
Oh, yeah, that was really bad. It's like they had a green screen just put over the maisonette, projecting some dreadful stars onto it.
And Carl dazzles her with his intricate knowledge of the constellations.
That's the plough. No, it was Orion's belt. He's so wise, he knows Orion's belt. But it wasn't even on the screen.
Yeah, everyone knows that one, apart from the people who were in charge of doing the CG.
Yeah.
And then they have a nice little scene where clouds are drifting past, seemingly on a piece of acetate dragged across the camera.
Yeah, classic effects there, I think they're using.
So, Dev hasn't rushed off to the hospital yet. He's still hanging around in the street because he comes out of his house excited and tells them that Sunita is coming out of her coma.
Hooray! But Carl looks worried about that.
I don't know why.
Hmm.
No. Well, so on Wednesday, Dev's hanging around outside Sunita's room, finding out that she's stable, but he's worried that she's not awake yet.
Yeah, the apparently she was responding a bit the night before, but then they had to sedate her again. So she looked like she was getting better, but maybe not. The prices are still talking about her back at home and wondering whether she'll get any plastic surgery because of her scarring.
Like, first of all, you don't know whether she's got scarring.
She didn't appear to, but
there was nothing. They didn't bother to put any scars or like burns on her face at all.
Not that I remember.
Maybe they were talking about her body. I don't know. But yeah, that came out of nowhere, really, didn't it? I don't know whether they're trying to make them seem more vacuous than they already do. But Carl's getting a bit sick of their jokes and he goes outside for a smoke in the ginnel.
Yeah, he sees Marcus out there who says, because Marcus knows everything that's going on at the hospital.
Well, Marcus is looking after the kids.
Yeah, he says that they're hoping to reduce the sedation later up today and maybe wake her up.
Don't forget that when Dr. Matt isn't in a scene, Marcus is the medical person who knows everything about medical things because he does ultrasounds.
Yes.
Except when they're needed.
Yeah, he wasn't in it tonight, was he?
Yeah,
so back at the hospital again, Sunita's sedation's wearing off and Dev is hassling her a little bit too much. Like, Sunita, wake up, come on, baby. The doctor says she may have brain damage, of course, because everyone that ever goes into the hospital there could have brain damage. Or at least she'll be a little bit woozy. He says that he'll be there for her as long as it takes. And the doctor kind of says, yeah, okay, she's making progress, slow and steady. So things were looking up for Sunita at this point.
Hooray, Sunita's going to come round soon and she can tell everybody what happened.
But little does Dev know that sneaking around outside is Carl having a bit of a skulk. And as soon as Dev leaves, he goes in.
Yeah.
He croons, it's always you, you ruin everything.
And she opens her eyes and she sees him.
Yeah, that was very good scared acting. It's like,
very good. Da, da. Just with the eyes.
Yeah.
So after the break, you can just hear beep, 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 and Carl sort of like nips out, looking a bit suspicious.
What did you think about the fact that we never actually saw what he did? Because
I don't...
Are we supposed to be in any doubt that he was responsible for it?
I'm not in any doubt at all that it was him that did it. So if that's what they were trying to achieve, they failed on that count.
I thought it could have been quite exciting to have seen a murder scene.
Yeah, but I guess it would have been a bit awkward to really portray how he was doing it.
Well, didn't they just say later that
the tube
came out and then she couldn't cope on her own?
I think it would be a bit too graphic, wouldn't it? I mean, it's kind of, I know it's just as bad, but the old pillow on the face thing isn't.
I was expecting a pillow on the face.
Yeah, I was expecting to have a pillow on the face, but pulling tubes out of people or like bending things and watching someone choke is kind of a bit too
morbid.
Medical, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just think it had also the too much possibility to be slightly comedic.
I don't know. I think it would have been a bit too much like he's a really nasty villain, because at the moment he's kind of a bit of a pathetic villain, isn't he? And he kind of bumbles around a bit like John Snape, but not as funny. And I think if they'd have shown him actually being a murderer, that would have kind of gone against our idea of him as being an accidental criminal.
Even when he pushed her down the stairs, wasn't like a really
No.
Obvious, like he didn't sort of give her a big grin and then push her dramatically
he
down
is no,
the stairs.
He is no Richard Hillman.
No. After all that, Dev is told that Sunita has been pronounced dead.
No, Sunita!
And that very sick patients often rally towards the end, but he can't accept it. And he's told that she might have been distressed by the ventilator, dislodged it, and then couldn't breathe by herself.
Yeah, he says that he should have been there.
Yeah.
Could have stopped it. Good. Oh yeah, and then we see Marcus getting told a bit later, doesn't he? Because he's just about to take the kids over to the hospital, but he gets the phone call from Dev and he's like, oh, better come over to me, children.
He tells them that they've got to do more tests so they can't see her.
Yeah.
And the kid's like, oh.
Yeah.
Little do they know.
Yeah. Now, we saw a bit of a scene later that didn't actually have any significance in the rest of the week, did we? But we see Carl going into the bistro later. Doesn't he pick up Dennis's wallet?
Yes. He picks it up and they sort of made a big deal about the fact that he touched the wallet.
Yeah.
And I thought, fingerprints? I don't understand.
That's the only reason it'd be, but why do they need to get fingerprints on Dennis's wallet? Was
number
it?
One, Dennis was handsy with it immediately afterwards, and he seemed to almost be touching it more than you would normally, which was very poor acting if that's the idea that they had.
Mm.
Number two, you wouldn't keep fingerprints on a wallet for very long because you'd use it yourself.
Yeah.
And number three, if Carl's a suspect in a murder inquiry, I'm sure they can take his fingerprints.
Yeah, so I don't understand what that was for, but maybe we'll find out in weeks to come.
The only thing they would need it for is if maybe another character does their own investigation.
Mm.
Because the police don't need to take his fingerprints off of Dennis's wallet.
No.
The wallet's still got nothing to do with anything.
No, nor's Dennis. Very confusing. But then anyway, Rita comes in and she announces to everyone about Sunita and the prices are all there and they can't believe it. Even Gloria says, God rest her soul, and she's been being mean about her for the past 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Stella, of course, uses this as an opportunity to have a good old cry in Carl's arms, but he is looking worried about it because he has just killed someone, quite possibly.
Yes,
quite probably.
I think so.
Yeah.
So in tonight's episode, Sophie is calling around for Dev through the letterbox, but he won't answer because obviously this has been, I suppose they're saying that this is the same amount of time has passed in the show as it has.
It did seem to be like a couple of days later, didn't it?
And he comes. He won't answer, so she sees Marcus and they're both worried.
Yeah.
But then Dev answers the door and he seems a bit disorientated. He's not quite sure what day or what time it is.
Mm.
And Sophie gives him a hug and they all go into the house and it's a bit of a state. And Sophie offers to make him breakfast and stuff. And he's going on about opening the shop. But then they realise that he hasn't told the kids yet and he's putting it off, which is a bit sad. And so Carl sees Sophie coming out and asks her about Dev, and she's very mean to him really, and he says, oh, I wish there was something I could do, and she says, you've done enough.
Yeah,
which is a classic line.
Yeah, so then we later cut to the prices and Jason's coming in to see Stella and he wants to have a word. He's sad about Sunita and he's like, oh, can we go out for a drink?
But I can't drink.
Yeah, brushes him off again. She obviously is in, her interest in him is fading fast by this point.
Yep. He says, you want to dump me? And she said no. And Jason says, yeah, well, I wish you'd see Carl for what he really is.
Why can't she?
She's such a
He's
mug.
Been even slimier than normal recently, and
he's
she's
so
just
disgusting.
Totally falling for his charms, what little charm he has. Is.
Exactly.
Very
so
unbelievable.
So when she comes storming back in without Jason, Carl and her have a little look at each other, which doesn't really tell you much, but the fact that they looked at each other at all is telling.
Oh, and then we finally get the scene where Dev tells the children, although we don't actually see it, because they have a lovely touching moment with the camera pulling through the rainy window.
Yeah, as we observed when we watched it, he only tells Asher.
Oh, yeah.
Asher. Ardy's just sat on the sofa like a can of unwanted beans.
I wish that they never usually show the scenes where somebody gets told that somebody's died, have they? That's Do you think they don't have faith in their actors for being able to?
They're only kids.
Oh, I'm thinking of Dev. Your mum, she's dead.
No, I think it's more dramatic if you don't see it. I don't know.
It wasn't very dramatic today.
You just want all the gory bits, don't you? I want to see their faces.
Yeah, I want to. Yeah.
The drama.
See the tears in their eyes.
No, they're lying on the sofa.
All sad later.
They do look like they're ill rather than sad.
Oh. Yeah,
but you can't criticise their acting because they're half orphans now.
Yeah.
Dev's telling Sophie that he doesn't think the kids really get it. And then she starts talking about the funeral, and Dev's like, oh yeah, I forgot about the funeral.
Yeah.
I've got to get organised, and I haven't even told the family.
Yeah, so I'll be interested to see what the funeral's like, whether it's like a proper Hindu funeral, or whether they'll like not show it at all. I think the fact that they had the big Hindu wedding for Dev and Sunita makes me think that they might... I'd be interested to see it. I was having a look up about Hindu funerals earlier, and the fact that they always have to be cremated, and depending on whether the woman is married or not, or a widow, will depend on what colour she wears, and all these rituals. I think it'd be quite interesting to see.
Really surprised if they give her a Hindu funeral.
Would you?
I would think it was brilliant, but I would be so surprised if they actually bothered to do it.
I would like Grishma and Uffma to come back for it.
No, you don't want comedy aunts coming back for your funeral. What is wrong with you?
That'd be brilliant.
No.
Oh. Well, if we don't see her now, then we're not going to see her again.
No, she can come back as someone else's aunt, like she did before.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So Dev asked Sophie to watch the kids for a bit, because he's got to go and organise everything.
Yeah.
So we cut to the bistro, and Leanne's saying that she can't believe that Sunita would have done such a thing. And Gloria's like, well, she did actually. And Stella goes, shut up, Mum!
Yeah, nobody can really believe it apart from Gloria. And obviously, and Carl is stirring
Carl's agreeing, and Eva's, I guess, is a bit conflicted about it.
Mm.
But she's just going along because Gloria's sort of a force of nature, really.
Sunita really didn't have much reason to do this. I mean, the police later come round and they think that it was suicide. But that's really the only thing that it could be, if they're to believe it was her. Because if they did it, she didn't know that Stella was there. If she did it to purposely burn down the pub, she would have escaped. I mean, if she would have thrown this
match
or whatever down into the downstairs and then run off. So it couldn't have been that. I don't think that she set the fire and then
nonsensical plot that they've come up with.
Yeah. So the only believable thing, if you believe Sunita did do it, is that she meant to die. But then, surely she would have found a better way of doing it than that.
Well, they say that women are more likely to kill themselves in a way that won't disfigure their bodies.
Are they?
Yeah, it's like a thing that they say that women use poison more than men because they want to preserve their... I don't know, it sounds a bit weird. I think it's... I don't know, I don't really know, but I don't think
that... Because men want you to look at their body and go, gross.
Oh my God. No, I think that it's more... It wouldn't be typical of a female suicide to kill yourself in a fire, I don't think.
No, and it certainly isn't the kind of thing that Sunita would do, which is what everyone's saying.
How many people kill themselves by setting fire to a building and sitting in it?
Yeah.
As heavy, that is.
You'd be more likely to be kind of... I can imagine sitting around the flames and then going, oh, guys, it's getting a bit hot, this isn't a very good idea, and then running off. I don't know.
Well, maybe their theory is that, well, although the theory was that she committed suicide by the time we finished this week, maybe they're going to decide that it's more plausible that she just became overwhelmed trying to escape and disorientated and couldn't find her way out.
Maybe.
And it went faster than she thought it was because of all that building supplies in the basement.
Yeah. I don't think they're ever going to know unless Carl comes out with
truth. Well, Carl's going to get...
He's going to get his comeuppance at some point.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he clears Sunita's name or somehow it comes out.
Do you think this is going to be a long-standing storyline that Carl has to live for his guilt with his guilt for months?
I think it's going to get quite far with this relationship between him and Stella.
Mm.
They're going to decide to go, be serious. Because obviously, well, we're jumping ahead a bit, but... at the end of the week, she's a free agent again, but she's not going out with Carl yet. So that will take a week.
I doubt it's going to take a week, the speed that they're going at. Basically, not much else happened for the rest of the episode. The police came round and they're kind of insinuating that Sunita tried to kill herself. Jason is having a mope over at Eileen's, and she says, well, get on and do something with it then if she's that important to you. So he goes round, they have an argument, and then Carl comes and kind of stops things from getting a bit too heavy, and Jason's like, fine, screw it then. We'll split up, but just don't go back to him, and if you do and he breaks your heart, then I'm not going to be around to pick up the pieces.
Basically, yeah, that's what's happened, and Steve tries to console Dev, which is kind of nice to see him have a friend, a shoulder to cry on.
Yeah.
And the police also say that they're trying to work out what exactly happened, and Carl tells them that Sunita was obsessed with him. But they're like, well, she was reconciled with Depp, so why would she do this? And they try to ask Stella more about the argument that she had with Sunita at the bistro. And she admits that Sunita did threaten her. And then she starts getting emotional and says, oh, she died hating me. And so that's where we leave the police investigation.
Yeah. After, did you feel sorry for Jason by the end of it, by the time they'd all split up?
Or? I did feel sorry for him because he kept sort of saying, look, you mean more to me than just a fling. This is really important to me, this relationship. I've never felt like this before, blah, 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 blah.
He's better off out of it, though. I mean, if she's this quick to go back to Carl, she's had a lucky escape, I think. Because even if they had sort of thrown Carl out, which is what Jason's been asking for all week, he'd have still come skulking back. So,
of course, now Jason hasn't got a job at all because he was supposed to be working in the bar.
Yeah.
Stella gave him a job, and then the whole thing went up in flames, and now he's broken up with the landlady.
Mm.
So what is he going to do for...
I don't know. Is he going to go crawling back to Owen?
Well, I mean, I think he should have probably told Tim by now that he's closed the company down, so maybe Tim can give him a job.
Tim's not been in it since the fire. I think if I was the police, he'd be prime suspect.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
Right, let's talk about the domestic abuse storyline. So Tyrone was freed last Friday, and he's back at home on Monday enjoying doing the hoovering. He sees a family picture of him and...
No, it's Kirsty and Ruby.
Oh, was it? I thought it was him and Kirsty and Ruby, and he turns it over, yeah.
It's got Kirsty in it. Symbolically. He doesn't like it. And he gives Ruby a hug, and he says, everything's going to be all right, kid. He didn't say kid, but he should have done. Fizz is in the cabin, and Julie's there asking about Tyrone, and Fizz being a cow and just blanks her.
Yeah, we kind of said last week that we thought that Fizz would be not too willing to forgive people for what they did, didn't we?
Yeah. Tells us that Tyrone's and he wants to go out for a pint because he's become an alcoholic. And Tyrone says, no, Fizz is my priority now. That was a bit nice, wasn't it? Sorry, Tez. And he doesn't want to go out to see people that turned against him, basically.
Yeah, he very much wants to just keep himself to himself. He thinks the whole street's turned against him.
Well, they had.
Yeah.
So Tyrone's been on the phone to the solicitor, who says Kirsty has been charged with perjury and perverting the course of justice, which totally shocked me, actually, because I kind of assumed that, in my stupid way, that when she came in and said, it was all me, they would go, oh, stop the trial, redo it again, but the other way around.
Mm.
So obviously she's not going to be charged with domestic violence at all.
No. Well,
which is really weird.
Yeah, but they are doing psychiatric investigations on her.
She is a bit balmy.
Yeah.
So Fizz asked him to go shopping with her, but he wants to stay at home with Ruby, and so Fizz is a bit worried and tells Tina that he's scared to face the world.
Yeah, they're all getting quite worried about Tyrone at this point because they don't want him to kind of turn into a bit of a hermit, and Tina at some point during the week was reminded herself about when she was trapped up in the flat for weeks on end with nobody going to see her, and she doesn't want that to happen to him. Yeah.
So they all rally around basically and decide to throw a surprise party.
Yeah.
And Tyrone brings the mood right down by telling them about how horrible prison is.
So during the party, we get to see various characters apologising to Tyrone. Sally says that she's sorry and she only had Ruby's best interests at heart. And she admits that she's a bad judge of character. So they all make up. We also see Eileen and Julie turning up at the party. And I think out of everyone, apart from Deirdre, who wasn't even in it this week, they're the two that most turned against him, aren't they? And
definitely.
They're the two that Tyrone and Fizz find it most difficult to forgive.
Well, Roy is the only one, really, who gives them any...
Yeah, he does quite a nice speech.
Yeah, he does a little speech and...
saying, well, we're all taken in by Kirsty.
And so Julie and Eileen just say, oh, please forgive us. And Fizz throws it back in their face, really. And Julie says, oh, well, I'm naive and stupid. And then Tyrone sort of goes, well, okay, I kind of, let's just leave it. Yeah. They don't really forgive them, but they just say, let's just move on.
Yeah, I think that was as good as we're going to get,
really. I don't
really
think they're going to bother with this storyline now. I thought that Julie would be...
Yeah, we said last week that Julie was going to end up sort of spiralling into depression because of what she's done, but I think that's going to happen now.
They've just given up on it, really.
Yeah, maybe it'll be Deirdre.
Yeah. So, it's all the mood, the celebratory mood is broken when Anna informs Tyrone.
Yeah,
how old that he's had a phone call from Kirsty.
Yeah, were you surprised to see Kirsty again this week?
Yes.
It wasn't.
I thought it was the end last week.
It seemed to be the end, and then, I mean, there was a bit of closure, I guess, this week, but it seemed.
I think it was superfluous.
It was a bit pointless from what we saw.
Well, let's talk about how pointless it was. Because on Wednesday, Tyrone went to go and visit Kirsty in prison. She seems quite relieved to see him. And he tells her, you can't hurt me anymore, basically. You can't touch me and you can't wreck my life. I don't want to listen to you.
Yeah, he's changed. He's like not the victim anymore. He knows that he's the one.
He's a big man now. She's locked up. Mm?
Yeah.
Let's see him in a room by himself then. So he says, don't contact me or Ruby again. And then Kirsty sort of explains, oh, I never meant to hurt you. I loved you from the beginning. I knew you were a good man. They bring up some weird kind of sexism thing where Tyrone accuses her of being a man hater and beating him up because he's a man and she hates all men, which is totally out of the blue. And I don't know why they went down that route at all.
Well, she just says that she knew he was a good man and she ended up thinking that good means weak. And that's when he continues to take her beating. So she was trying to sort of weasel her way out of it.
I just thought that was very bizarre. So she says, I'll sort myself out, even though I know it's over between us. And then Tyrone says, don't have any more kids, which is probably the most hurtful thing you can say to a woman. I'd find that quite hurtful if somebody said to me, don't ever breed.
It's for her own good, though, and Kirsty kind of agreed.
But that's the worst of it, though, the fact that it's true.
Mm. Well, she's still got Ruby, hasn't she? Because Tyrone says, yeah, you'll always be her mum. Whether you can be her mum, she'll love back. That's up to you. So he's kind of giving her a second chance, but not really. I mean, he says, don't contact me again, but
I really don't know. I don't think she'll be in it again anyway.
I don't know. She still could be. Well, we got some feedback about that later. We'll talk about it properly in the feedback session. So by the time Tyrone gets home, he's really pleased that he's got everything off his chest. And then they sort of start to talk about moving in together. Now they want to be a proper family. But she says that she can't because of Chesney. He's too miserable.
That was basically the storyline we had on Friday today. Was basically Fizz and Chesney and Tyrone having a dilemma. And Fizz involves Hayley into this because they don't know which house to stay in because Fizz doesn't want to leave Chesney and Tyrone doesn't want to leave his house and his memories of Jack and Vera.
Mm.
And so Hayley tells Chesney that Fizz is worried about him. And after the break, Chesney tells Fizz that she shouldn't put her life on hold for him and he'll be okay. But she really doesn't think he'll be all right because he'll be broke within a month and all alone. And they kind of like bond because of the sibling, you know, the experiences, the shared experiences they've had coping with having Scylla as a mum.
Yeah. Do you think that Fizz is kind of overreacting a little bit?
Yes.
Do you think that that's really the reason that she doesn't want to move in with Tyrone?
I do find this storyline really weird. Fizz tells Tyrone she can't move in with him and he takes it well because he says, well, I'm still happy that I've got hope and I'm out of prison.
Yeah.
So what's going on here? Is it kind of lost a bit of its passion because they're not forbidden to see each other anymore?
Oh, I don't know, maybe.
I just can't see why they've written this in because the writers could just have easily have said Chesney's fine by himself and he can't wait to have the house to himself so he can fart all the time.
Yeah.
It just really doesn't make sense.
Maybe they want to kind of paint Tyrone and Fizz as kind of a traditional couple and they don't live with each other and they're going to don't go down that route and they're going to
move in. The traditional family that both have children from other relationships.
You know.
I don't know.
Do you think that, which house do you think they are eventually going to end up in? Tyrone's or Fizz's?
Tyrone's, I always assume.
Yeah, that's what I think.
But what are they having this storyline for?
I think they need to get Fizz moving into Tyrone's house, get Chesney out of there, get him to move in with somebody or get him to have a flat or something and then bring a new family into.
They just need to draw a line under this now. Just draw a line under it because they're keeping it alive by having the dilemma of where shall we live?
Yeah.
We're separated by a wall.
And I'm not particularly keen on Katie coming back to Chesney to sort that out.
I just want them to move in together and just have a few weeks off.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then they're dragging it out.
Maybe they will. I don't know.
Oh, well, Chesney's going to be in it because they've been building up this thing about him being, you know, going off and having drinks all the time.
Oh, do you think that's going to turn into something bigger, do you?
Well, what's the point of it otherwise?
I don't know. Right, well, let's talk about more happy things. Sylvia storyline, high tea at the Roy's Rolls.
Very happy.
So, Sylvia's in the cabin and tells Dennis that she's off to go and get some special brownies later, because Dennis is all getting involved in with this now. A little bit later on, Sylvia and Anna are snowed under at the cafe. Of course, they're only ever snowed under when somebody needs to nip off. Because as soon as Stan arrives, Sylvia rushes over to see him, and she says that she can't go to the 1 o'clock club, but he's brought her some brownies anyway. So she puts them down on the side, and we very clearly see them being put down. So you said, oh, someone's going to go and eat some of those, didn't you? You knew what was going to happen there.
Well, it was fairly obvious. Well, if you put cakes down in a cafe, what will happen to them? Roy comes back from the cash and carry and Hayley's out of the salon, and Sylvia spills lasagna on herself and he takes her away to help clear her up. That gets her out of the picture. So Rita comes in for cakes and sees the brownies and says, I'll have some of those, please, Anna. So Anna's like, yes, here you go. Enjoy.
Lucky that it was Rita and not some random person that would have sued the cafe. That could have taken the storyline in a very different direction.
That would have been
direction.
Very exciting. Sylvia comes down and she's totally shocked that Anna sold the brownies. And she clears the remaining ones up and she finds out from Dennis...
That Rita's taken them.
She finds out that... Rita had taken them and tells Dennis.
Yeah, so she rushes off to go and get them. Yeah, they rush into the cabin, Dennis and Sylvia, and they grab the cakes just as Rita's going to eat them, and Rita is highly suspicious. Now, Rita was quite
Sylvia
good at...
Sylvia says they're for starving babies, which is an awesome
line. That was funny. Rita was very good at sniffing out the cannabis in today's episode, but couldn't really tell on Monday that she was just about to take a bite into
no.
it.
Well, Rita asked him what's going on. Dennis, what's going on? But he's a bit evasive. He always is.
He's always evasive about everything.
So on Wednesday, Dennis still teasing Sylvia and saying that she's got the munchies, and then he brings up the fact that he's got a bad back himself.
God, old people, eh?
So in the cafe, he later asks Sylvia for some relief.
Yeah,
that could have gone.
His ibuprofen aren't cutting the mustard.
And Sylvia says, "I'm not a drug dealer, and I've only got enough stock to last me until Monday."
This is getting quite funny. This storyline.
I thought it was quite funny because at the moment we're watching Breaking Bad, yeah. Which is about a teacher who turns into a meth manufacturer.
Yeah.
And just contrasting the two worlds of like the New Mexico Albuquerque drug scene versus Roy's Rolls and some weed brownies. It's quite funny.
They still were for the whole week painting it as a comedy storyline, even though there was this illegal thing going on though. I mean, we got the moral lesson at the end
I
of the week from
the
Dr.
Whole
Matt, though,
thing
didn't
was
we?
Badly handled.
Why?
Let's get to the end of it.
Okay.
So Sylvia's sweeping, but her wrist hurts. Oh no.
No, it's not. Her wrist's feeling better.
Oh, her wrist is feeling better. Oh, well, good. That's all right then. And Dennis gets jealous, and he says, "Oh, I'm sorry. I made fun of you eating the brownies. Can you get me some drugs?" And she says, "I'll speak to Stan and get another order in."
Yeah. So today, Dennis comes back into the cafe, still after this product, which is what they call it on Breaking Bad.
That's why I wrote that. I don't think she says that. I know the lingo, you see.
And Sylvia's baked some herself because she hasn't been able to get some more from Stan. So.
Which is utterly, utterly bizarre.
Yeah.
I just thought that bit was very weird, that she's so blasé about just...
Yeah, I just made some
preparing it. She's gone from eating it to solve her pain issues to preparing it for other people.
Yeah.
Which is a big step to go down.
And it turns out she hasn't really got the recipe quite right either, because when Rita later comes into the cabin, Dennis is passed out on the floor.
She shouts at him, but he's like really mellow and has eaten a lot of sweets.
Yeah.
She finds the brownies and she smells them and instantly knows that they are drugged.
Rita really gets on his high horse about this, doesn't she?
Well, when Dennis comes back, Rita goes, "Oh, I ate the brownies." Oh! I don't think she really knows what drugs do to you, because she starts having an asthma attack. Dennis apologises and Rita goes, "Ah,
caught,
I knew
yeah.
that they were drugged." Right, phone up Roy and tell him to bring Sylvia around.
I don't think Dennis can ever pull the wool over Rita's eyes. She's too sly for him.
I do love them for that, though.
Yeah.
So Sylvia comes in completely high and starts demanding a variety of sweets.
Yeah.
And Rita says, "Roy, I've got to talk to you."
Yeah. So Rita's telling Roy later on that his mum's a drug pusher, and Sylvia eventually admits that it was Stan who provided it. And then
it's
she
okay,
starts talking.
There's four
Everyone,
o'clock,
yeah, everyone's
five or
doing
six
it.
People
everyone's doing it. Peer pressure.
On the
right?
1 o'clock club doing it, so it's okay. So Rita says the 1 o'clock club is a drugs den, and she's going to call the police.
Yeah, Dennis says that they've learnt their lesson, though, but Sylvia won't apologise.
No. Well, I think she's kind of like, she's like me in a way, I guess. She won't admit when she's wrong.
Yeah, she
won't. Back down.
She said,
she's
I did
like,
it
well,
to ease
like.
My pain.
Go on then,
ease...
phone the police, see if I care.
Yeah, well, they don't phone the police. They manage to convince us against
they
Dr. Carter. They march
her down to the doctor so we can all have a Coronation Street Explains Drugs episode.
Yeah.
This was probably one of the most patronising scenes I've seen in a long time, because at the doctor's, Matt explains to them that cannabis is illegal and there are lots of side effects that perhaps they didn't realise there were.
Yeah.
Such as, I can't remember.
Yeah, I was a bit bored at this point.
And he runs
makes
a pain clinic.
Gives you
clinic,
heart palpitations.
And it makes you paranoid.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He says he runs a pain clinic every Friday and Sylvia and Dennis should come along to it. And he really doesn't want to get involved other than that, does he? He's like, look, stop bringing your granny drug dealing problems to me. I don't know what to say. What do you want me to say? Drugs are bad.
Yeah. I'm surprised they didn't have something at the end of the episode saying, if,
oh,
you've,
maybe
got,
they did,
if you've got a sore hand, go to your local pain clinic.
I don't know what the point of this scene was, apart from it seems that Rita and Sylvia now hate each other.
Yeah, because Rita's told Dennis to stay away from Sylvia.
No, Rita tells Sylvia
to stay away from Dennis. Yeah, and then Roy tells Sylvia to stay away from the 1 o'clock glove, which is hilarious. So they're trying to convince her to go only 2 weeks ago.
But I really don't know. It seems to me as though somebody on Coronation Street is trying to tell us something about cannabis. I don't get what this is about. It seems like there's somebody really conservative working for Coronation Street and they're kind of alarmed by all this talk of marijuana legalisation in America and they're just trying to put the stops on it before it gets any further by getting the influential Coronation Street watching crowd on their side, on the anti-drug side, so that we can vote against it when they have an election.
Oh, I don't know. They did manage to make cannabis look quite fun.
Well,
most of the story
no, because as Matt explained, it does have side effects in the long term.
Okay. So is this the end of the storyline now?
I think it's the end of the drug storyline, but it's not the end of Rita versus Sylvia.
Ooh. That sounds exciting. Then I wonder whether there's going to be like Dennis having an affair with Sylvia or something later down the line.
No, but I wonder what other people thought of the storyline because it just seemed like a very strange, very preachy kind of unnecessary. I mean, who needs to be told about the side effects of marijuana these days?
It was just there for comic relief, the whole of the storyline, and they couldn't have had that without there being the preachiness at the end.
I guess so. They shouldn't have gone down that route, though, should they?
No.
They could have done it about crystal meth, and then we could have spoken more about Breaking Bad and done a little comparison. Maybe had a special podcast.
Maybe. Let's move on to talk about the surrogacy, because that's reared its ugly head again this week. Although it's been a while since it's kind of been properly featured, so I'll...
You're going to give it a pass?
I'll let it go in for a little bit, yeah. So,
The only thing that happens on Monday is that Owen pops over and Tina offers him burnt pizza. This was at the party.
Oh, yeah.
And he offers her more work because Gary had been talking to her about the fact that she's a bit broke and put Owen up to asking her to take on more hours.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So this is this sort of continuation of Gary's low-level meddling in Tina's affairs in a kind of...
Low-level?
It is at the moment. A patronising kind of, I'll take
He's
care of you.
He's obsessed with Tina
sort of,
and the baby.
He really is. He really is. It's kind of creepy.
Yeah, well, we get to see the 20-week scan they have today. That's right, we're only halfway through the surrogacy storyline.
Gary's excited on Wednesday because he wants it to be a boy, basically.
Yeah, he's demanding to know what the sex of the baby is.
What? That's why this is called
Gary begs
for
Tina
sex.
Sex.
Yeah. Gary begs T sex.
Tina for sex. He's suggesting names. And he's begging Tina to find out whether it's a boy or a girl, and he comes up with a silly little code, broccoli or grapes, to say
it.
Whether that's broccoli if it's a boy or grapes if it's a girl or something strange like that.
Neither of those suggest.
Well, I don't know.
Anyway, on Friday, Gary brings Tina some food because he just can't help himself from looking after her, even though she hasn't asked him to. And she says she feels fat, and he says, "You look fantastic." And she says, "You're only trying to butter me up because you want to find out the gender of the baby." And he's like, "No."
So they're going up there.
Izzy's decided that she doesn't want to know. And so...
No. Oh, yeah, Izzy doesn't
Izzy's decided that she doesn't want to know. So Tina's going along with that, and she says, only if Izzy says.
Yeah.
So...
We see the scan again later, don't we? And like we've seen before, Tina's very kind of detaches herself from it, doesn't she? She doesn't even want to look on the screen.
She doesn't
want
to...
Even though I assume that when the baby is born, she'll want to keep it, because, you know...
This is where it's going. This is where it's going. It's going down the line of Gary and Tina wanting to keep the baby themselves, and Izzy can get Ben.
Yeah. Well, they find out that it's a boy.
Hooray.
Yeah. And Gary's very chuffed about this.
Gary boasts about how giant a penis his son has.
But we think it's the umbilical cord.
It's a fair guess that that's what it is. And Gary talks to Tina and says, "Look, it's your baby too. Why weren't you looking at the scan?" And she says, "Look, it's your baby. It's not mine. It's easier for me if I don't."
Yeah.
And this is where it's going to go. Gary's going to gradually chip away at this armor that she's built up until she starts thinking of it as hers.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Do you think that she's going to just tell him to get stuffed, or is she going to...
I hope she does.
She should.
Who wants a creepy guy like Gary hanging about?
Yeah, well, later
they're
on...
They're not suited to each other at
later
all.
Later on, she obviously wasn't too happy about him being around the flat. Because when Tina gets home, she finds out that her flat's been broken into, which kind of came out of nowhere. And it seemed to be just used as a plot device to get Gary around there a little bit more.
Gary is the knight in shining armour, comes round, and he goes round to check on her.
Yeah, and she's a bit upset because Joe's wedding ring's been...
stolen.
Yeah.
So Gary spends ages there, even though he's just gone off for some reason.
He went up to get some champagne, didn't he?
And he gets sort of comforting Tina, giving her a hug, fixing the door, putting a new lock on it, telling her to ring him if she needs anything, and inviting her to stay at Anna's for the night, but she won't.
Yeah. So he goes back later, and then he says, "Sorry that I haven't told you. I've been away all this time. I haven't bothered to text you." And then Izzy says, "Oh, it's all right. Go over and stay at her house." It's like Chesney. He doesn't actually need looking after, and I don't think really Tina did either.
No, she's but these a other hard people, woman. Yeah. She doesn't need... And then Gary comes round, and in a stunning case of complete ignorance, says, "I've come to look after you, but it's not sexist because my girlfriend told me to." As though women can't be sexist too. Gary, get a clue. So he spends the night on the floor. Tina's not really happy about it. I don't know.
I think she's kind of given up. She's not too bothered about it. I'm sure she thinks she could go by herself. But...
yeah, they have a little kind of friendly chat and...
She's either going to end up pushing him away, or these feelings will end up being reciprocated and she'll end
up...
Well,
yeah, we know that, yeah. That's the only two ways it can go.
What do you think? I think it's probably going to end up going down with the affair route, even if it's just for a bit.
It's going to go down the affair route because he's obviously somehow attracted to her because she's carrying his baby. Mm. Maybe that's a sort of normal, manly...
I foresee a punch-up between Gary and Tommy then.
Ooh. I think that... Izzy should wait for Tina to give birth and then slap her on the face.
So, final storyline of the week has just been a bit of fallout between... it's more kind of fire-related, isn't it? Because Paul's just moaning about Tony being dead all week.
There's nothing really that happens.
No, nothing really happened. I've got a couple of paragraphs worth of storyline details, but basically what it boils down to is...
Eileen's worried about Paul. She gets the doctor to see him, and he doesn't like that at all, the idea that he's not coping.
Yeah.
And then he decides to go back to work.
Yeah.
Without Eileen's approval.
Goes to work, goes out for a jog today, and he's getting very fed up with her meddling.
Well, they kind of... At the end, he sort of says, "Look, I'm sorry, I know that you are upset because you care about me, but, I need to go back."
Yeah.
And she's really mad at him, really.
Things aren't looking good between Eileen and Paul, though, are they?
Not really.
Yeah. Don't think they're going to survive this.
No, I don't think so, which is a shame because we liked them as a couple, didn't we?
I kind of did.
Well, we wanted
Eileen
to have a... man.
Yeah, but the way that Paul's turned out in the end, he is getting a bit tedious.
Yeah, I agree. He's gone boring now.
Yeah. So that was it for Street Talk. It's been okay this week. I mean, I think
it's following always going to be a bit anticlimactic.
Yeah, once you've had a fire and then a big trial, they're never going to be able to live up to it. But
of course, the scene with Sunita.
Yeah.
But as we had a discussion at the time, it could have been so much more dramatic than it was.
They could have made it more dramatic. Yeah. I don't think that the next few weeks of Coronation Street are going to be that exciting. I think
everything's going to calm down. I don't know. It depends on how they...
There's going to be lots of stuff. I'm not really interested in Carl and Stella. Every time I see them in a scene, I just kind of rolling my eyes at Stella.
I'm really mad at her, and I cannot wait to see her face when she realises that she's been duped again by a dull-witted idiot.
Yeah.
She's not a stupid woman, but somehow she falls for him again and again.
Yeah. I just hope that they don't make Carl into kind of this big villain for the year. Because I don't think I can bear for him to be on the screen for all this long.
No.
They need to get him sorted out pronto.
Yeah.
Right, let's get on with a character profile of a proper villain. So, character profile time. We've had to say goodbye to two characters this week, Sunita and Kirsty. We already did a character profile of Sunita 2 weeks ago.
It's almost like you knew that
it is almost...
she was going to die.
Did we do a very good fact of covering up the fact that she wasn't going to be in it? I think we could have covered it better, but you know, lots of people knew. So anyway, the Kirsty Soames is our character profile.
You are terrible with spoilers, and I would like to go on record as saying that I avoid them and I avoid talking about them, and it is
people
all
know,
your
people
fault.
Know.
All your fault.
So, Kirsty, she was born on the 24th of May, 1982.
Good year.
Her parents were Ed and Alison Soames. She's obviously got one child, Ruby, who was born last year. She first appeared on the 7th of September, 2011, and her final appearance was this week, on the 3rd of April, 2013.
Such a short run.
I know. She appeared in just 192 episodes, but I think she's going to go down as a very, very memorable character.
Mind you, though, I don't think people remember Maya that much.
I don't think Maya was in it quite as much.
Really?
And I don't think she was as good a character.
Okay.
She had the great exit, but everything about Kirsty, well, Natalie Gamedes acted and played the part very, very well and convincingly.
If only they could splice Mad Maya's exit with Kirsty's storyline, it would have been the perfect storyline for me.
Kirsty's final exit was a bit of a damn squib.
She went out with a whimper.
Yeah. But maybe that won't be a final episode. Maybe one day she'll be
maybe
back.
Maybe one day she'll set fire to the railers again.
So we first heard about Kirsty a couple of years ago. I think she was cast in like June or July 2011. And she said, "From the moment I read the script, I knew I was going to love playing Kirsty, and I can't wait to see how the story unfolds." Phil Collinson at the time said that a brand new character is going to come in. She's called Kirsty. I have to say, it's not all going to be a smooth ride for Tyrone. He's got a lot of baggage, and he's got a lot... that he's got to get over.
It's a bit of a weird description of what was about to happen.
Well, he doesn't want to spoil it too much.
So,
I mean, we've already covered a lot of the domestic abuse storyline when we did Tyrone as a character. When we did Tyrone as a character profile last year, and then when we had the awards show. So we'll try and be brief. But basically, Kirsty first appeared in late 2011 when she was paid by Tommy to speak to Tyrone because Tyrone was feeling a bit down in the dumps after everything that had happened with Molly and everything, I think. And she had to pretend that she was interested in him, but actually was. They actually got on and they agreed to meet again.
Oh, first sight.
Yeah. I think my first impressions of Kirsty weren't initially that positive because I don't usually like it when brand new characters come in anyway. They have to do a lot to meet my approval, and I think
I kind of dislike it when a female character is introduced on the base, or any character actually, on the basis of look how good looking this person is.
Yeah, which is
what
she
was.
She was
introduced.
Yeah.
Like, look at this stunner. There's no way Tyrone could ever get her in real life.
And I think back then I was still thinking, this is the perfect opportunity for Tyrone and Maria to get back together.
Oh, shut
again.
Up about Tyrone and Maria.
I'm over that now. I'm happy that Tyrone is with Fizz.
Are you?
Yeah,
are you really
I'm
over
properly
it?
Over Tyrone
oh
and Maria.
My goodness.
I don't think that's going to go anywhere.
Celebration.
So, right from early on, there was lots of tension.
There were
and
hints that she might be a bit angry.
A bit psychopathic. There was a feud between her and Tina right from the very beginning, basically.
Yeah, she always hated Tina.
Tina accidentally parked Rita's car in the way of Kirsty's, which she got quite mad about. And then Tina accused Kirsty of scratching Rita's car, and that's when it was revealed that she was a police officer. Yes. And they're basically then Kirsty's got Tina in her sights and she's gunning for her for quite a few months. She gets her stopped at a shopping centre for supposedly shoplifting, and then she tries to get her arrested for speeding, but it turns out that it was Rita that was driving. So whoopsie.
Tyrone finds out about all this and they split up for a bit.
Yeah, oh, if only he'd split up with her then. Think of all the pain and suffering that could have been avoided.
Well, the reason they get back together follows on because she suspects that Tina and Tyrone are seeing each other, which is why she was dumped. So she follows them and speeds up and drives into the back of them. And when she's being treated at hospital, she's pregnant. She's
pregnant. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
And she and Tyrone reunite because Tyrone realises that his family that he had that impassioned speech to the vicar about, his is family that he can love.
But Tina and Tommy don't want to have any of this, so they spend a good few months trying to split him and Kirsty up. Oh, yeah, and there was one point when they accused her of cheating on him, but actually she was just meeting up with her cousin to plan a present for Tyrone or a party or something. And Tyrone later proposes to her.
Aww.
Because she's so lovely.
Tyrone and Kirsty team up to search the council office.
I enjoyed this.
Yeah, for evidence to incriminate Terry. Who is obviously...
Yeah, he was doing dodgy dealings with...
evil son.
Yeah, he was doing dodgy dealings with one of the councillors, wasn't he? To try and get this strip club open.
He was greasing palms.
Yeah.
But they get caught.
This is one of the few kind of really kind of good things that Kirsty does, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, this was a good deed that Kirsty did for Tyrone, and it all blows back in her face because she gets fired from being a cop, and this is when she really spirals down because that job was what was... given her an outlet for her controlling aggressive behaviour,
yeah.
I guess.
She could take it out on the crims.
Yeah.
So
Breaking Bad.
The replacement job at Underworld, packing boxes, getting trained up by Kirk, is
not
really
exactly
a good replacement for her.
No. And this leads to the first outburst that she has against him, where she attacks him with a ladle.
But then says sorry afterwards.
Sorry, didn't mean to hit you with a ladle.
Yeah.
We've all heard that before.
Yeah. I don't think I knew that this... I can't remember whether I knew or not whether this domestic abuse storyline was going to happen when it did, but it was a nice... Ooh, jolt, a good shock when she first attacked him. And from then onwards, for the next 6 months or so, every time that tensions kind of arose between them, it was like...
He was just kind of waiting for her to whack him with something.
Yeah.
Tyrone organises a surprise birthday party for Kirsty and invites her parents. So that must have been her 30th birthday.
Yeah, yeah, I think so.
And her father is enraged when he finds out that she's pregnant and no longer a policewoman.
Her dad was a nasty piece of work though, wasn't he?
He was in the police quite high up, wasn't he?
Yeah.
So he's quite unpleasant and sort of ruins the party, as she predicted that he would do. And he leaves, and this sparks Kirsty into starting another argument, and she forces him up against the door.
Yeah.
And she reveals to Tyrone that her mother was quite regularly beaten by her father, and so
he forgives her again.
Yeah.
And this dangling plot thread of Ed and Allison was never resolved, and that's a real shame, I think.
Yeah, you were expecting it to go somewhere.
Yeah,
I wasn't. I thought they...
I was really surprised that we didn't even get to see Ed at all this year. It was just Allison kind of coming in, sort of saying, well, I've sneaked away from him for the day.
Do you know what I think could have been, if they had wanted him in?
What?
Could have been the thing that pushed Kirsty into actually admitting that it was her all along would be just him looking at her and then just shaking his head. That would have been enough.
Yeah.
She does another good deed.
Oh, yeah, later
when
on that,
she gets Loan Shark Rick arrested, who was hassling Tina.
Yeah.
Using her police connections.
Yeah.
And Tina grudgingly thanks her.
Yeah, but the good Kirsty doesn't last very long because later on in the year she has these Braxton Hicks contractions in the cafe, but Tyrone doesn't answer her mobile phone because he's fixing Fizz's boiler, and when she finds out she smashes plates against the wall and, worst of all, the picture of Tyrone and Jack together. Later on, she hits him with a Hoover nozzle, which is, I think, the one that a lot of people remember, and that was after finding that Tyrone had given Tommy a loan repayment holiday so that he could go off and visit Tina's grandma with her.
This is when she was controlling how Tyrone reacted with his friends by getting him, because he originally gave Tommy money to give to Terry.
Yeah.
And so she was using this to make Tyrone hold it against Tina and Tommy to isolate him from them so they wouldn't be friends anymore.
Yeah.
So she forced him to keep asking for repayments all the time because she wanted the money back. I don't think it was ever really a question of the money. She just wanted power over Tina and Tommy.
Yeah, definitely. You're right. Well, she later agreed to go for counselling because every time that she hit Tyrone, she apologised. And
she looked always surprised as well.
Yeah.
How did I do that?
Yeah.
Magic.
Because she was never painted as just this evil baddie. She was supposed to have a human side to her as well,
wasn't
she?
She's nothing like Charlie Stubbs.
No, not at all.
But then she was far more violent than he ever was, so figure that one out.
Mm. She backs out of her counselling, though, doesn't she? She didn't go along to it.
It was sort of personal counselling. It wasn't like couples counselling.
No.
Because Tyrone doesn't know. And when he finds out, they have another argument.
Yeah, and this was what happened when Deirdre found Kirsty because he'd accidentally pushed her away and she'd fallen over
And cut her head.
Yeah.
So this is when Deirdre discovered the bleeding and realised that Tyrone had been beating her all along.
Yeah.
But didn't say anything until the trial.
Yeah. So later on that year, Tina tells Tommy about the abuse because Tina knows about it, and then Kirsty causes lots of problems between the two of them again. She demands bigger loan repayments. Going between jobs at this point, and he's like got a job as a pizza delivery guy, and then she orders a pizza and then says he's brought the wrong one, and
that was so funny.
And he crashes his van because he's so tired. Wasn't that when he'd only had the job for about a day and he'd like miss one night's sleep or something?
It's like, you can't, are you that incompetent at life that you crash your car just because of one mishap with some olives on a pizza?
And I was almost on Kirsty's side there because I don't really like Tommy.
I don't like Tommy either. I thought it was brilliant. I was like, yes, tell him there's olives on it. So he screws up and loses his job.
Yeah, they also lose their flat as well, don't they? Because Julie and Brian are persuaded by Kirsty to buy Tina and Tommy's flat that they've been looking after.
Makes them homeless.
Yeah.
Mm. She's not an enemy you want to have, is she?
No.
So she has an argument in the Rovers with Tina because of all this drama that's going on, and they have a little struggle.
Yeah, and a scuffle. Tina pushes her over and then she goes into labour.
Yep.
That was just when Gloria had arrived, wasn't it? And then Gloria was there giving advice.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So she gives birth. Does she give birth in the pub? I think she does, doesn't she?
Yeah.
And it's Ruby!
Ruby.
Yeah. But she struggles to look after her.
Yeah, she can't cope with all the crying, and then she never really learns to deal with that, does she?
Do you ever?
Well, everyone else that she's ever had a problem with, she just either shouts or hits and then they eventually stop. But it doesn't work at a baby. You can't shout at a baby and then they'll stop crying.
They never dared to make her that bad, did they?
No.
They never dared to go down that route, but I'm sure that
they did allude to it, though.
No, they said that she thought that she might do it.
Yeah, yeah.
They never said that she did.
No.
But you're not supposed to believe that she's capable of it, I don't think. Because she stopped herself.
I think she could have done.
I think they're too scared to do that.
Mm.
Because I think that a woman like that would probably give it a little tap. A little friendly tap.
So this is last autumn, and then Alison came back in for a while to help, didn't she? But then Ed turned up and snatches the baby, and then made Alison go back home with him. So things are still not resolved there for the parents. Then Kirsty throws a candlestick at Tyrone and threatens to leave him. He threatens to leave her. Yeah, that's right.
And this is when she pulls out her secret weapon.
That she didn't put the name on the birth certificate. Sneaky, sneaky.
And instantly, Tyrone agrees to be a stay-at-home dad.
Yeah. then that kind of turns into the love storyline, doesn't it? Which some people weren't too happy with. Did you not like it?
Because when
Fizz was brought in as the as this new love interest for Tyrone, and she finds out all about the abuse, and she takes these photos and then deletes them. We have Fizz convincing Katie to take Tyrone along to the Super Tykes
and
parents
Kirsty
group.
Doesn't like that because there are all these attractive mums there, and he's
she's jealous.
So she decides to repay Fizz by causing a little bit of an accident, where she turns the electricity on when Fizz thinks that it's been switched off on her machine, and she sews her hand up.
That was good, that was good.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and then that wasn't the end of Fizz either, because later on, either was it that week or the next week, she goes round to Fizz's house and sort of pushes her up against the wall and threatens her, but Tyrone is listening in, so that's when he finally realises what a nasty piece of work she was.
Yes. And then Kirsty discovers texts from Fizz on Tyrone's phone, and she locks him in the house. She takes away his phone as well, doesn't she?
Yeah, one episode that it was just about the Tyrone and Kirsty storyline. I think that's what that was.
And when he confronts her, she beats him up.
Yeah.
He wants to run away, but Fizz and Tommy decide that the best way to solve this problem would be to marry Kirsty, so that he can get rights over Ruby, which does somewhat bite him in the bum a little bit when it comes to the court case, and he has to try to convince everybody that he was still wanted to marry her, even though it does count against both of them in the end, doesn't it?
Yeah. So this year we had a bit of a drama around Tyrone's birthday, because Kirsty finds this birthday card that Fizz has given him. But the wedding plans still go ahead, but unbeknownst to Tyrone, Kirsty has found this secret phone that Fizz gave him for Christmas, and then she planned to expose the affair during the ceremony, which she did.
I like the way when she found it, she was sort of looking through all the text messages, and she was like shaking, doing that like wobbly head thing that she does when she gets really stressed out. And she also saw the pictures that Fizz had taken, and she deleted them right in front of Tyrone's face.
Yeah.
Didn't she?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. So there goes that evidence, because Fizz deleted them too. So after this disastrous ceremony, Kirsty fell down the stairs and blamed Tyrone, and then he was arrested, but then released on bail, luckily for him. But rather than accepting Kirsty's suggestion to try again, he snatched Ruby away with the help of Kevin and Sally, and then they went off to Wales. But I guess luckily for that storyline, which was getting a bit silly, Fizz docked them in.
Yeah, and Tyrone ends up being taken into custody.
Yeah.
And he's charged with assaulting Kirsty.
Yeah.
So he's stuck in prison and Kirsty's free, and everyone's convinced that she was indeed the victim of this terrible crime.
Until she broke down and she couldn't look after Ruby, and that's what we saw last week. She eventually did the right thing and confessed. So that was Kirsty, and I think she'll go down as definitely one of the classic characters from this decade, even though she was only in it for just under 200 episodes.
Such a brief yet bright flame.
Yeah, it's a shame that she left, but I think she kind of
had to.
But she could come back.
Beating him all day long.
I think probably Natalie Gamedia is going to go on and do loads of like ITV crime dramas.
Oh, she'll probably be in a crime drama or something.
Yeah, with Catherine Kelly or Saran Jones.
Maybe they'll bring her into Mr. Selfridge.
Yeah, but
who knows?
I'd like her to come back.
Very few soap actors make any huge.
Yeah.
It's
a shame because she is a really, really good actor, and she did quite a good.
She was brilliant.
She did an excellent job at making you feel sorry for her, even though she was doing all these horrible things to Tyrone.
A lot of people hated her, so I'm sure we'll get lots of people telling us that we're wrong and she's not likeable at all.
She has won awards, though. Well, she got the Best Newcomer Award at the British Soap Awards last year. She was robbed this year. She was nominated for Most Popular Newcomer at the National Television Awards, but she lost out to someone in EastEnders, I think.
I'm surprised she didn't win the Royal Television Society of Critics of Radio and Television Drama Award for Best Lady in a Domestic Abuse Storyline.
Coronation Street has won lots of awards recently, as you know, and I think that she is very instrumental in that. I think if this domestic abuse storyline hadn't happened, then Corrie wouldn't have won half the awards it has.
And I also think that she should be credited for a lot of Tyrone Allen
Oh, definitely. Because, yeah, he's getting loads of awards, best actor and everything. Yeah, he would never have got those.
To play off of, and yeah. She was the perfect choice.
Yeah, the two of them work very, very well together.
Yeah.
So
farewell, Kirsty.
Farewell, Kirsty. It's been very nice knowing you. And maybe we'll meet. That. Well, hopefully.
She's been a dreadful person.
Right, let's go on to the cabin now.
Cabin.
Yeah, it's the news section. It's been a very slow news week again this week. We need some proper Coronation Street news. We've just got some little.
I don't think there ever is, apart from spoilers.
Yeah, there sometimes there is.
Go on then. What's
her? Well, there's been this week. So we've had Chrissy Bonn, who plays Jenna, has been announced as being a patron of the Children with AIDS
Chrissy
charity.
Chrissy Bonn is a hilarious name. It sounds like Cinnabon.
She was obviously in the medical profession, if you remember, before she got the role as Jenna. She used to get men to drop their trousers and stuff.
Of course.
So she wanted to be a patron of this charity that's got something to do with
Children
medicine.
With AIDS.
Yes. So she says, what some people don't know is that prior to Coronation Street, I was training as a healthcare support worker in one of London's top sexual health centres, with a clinic designed specifically for those living with HIV and AIDS. It's partly because of this job that I decided to become involved with the Quack. It's called Children with AIDS Charity, and it's got a little duckling as its logo. Aww. I saw on its website, so I think it is like Quack.
That is a good cause. It's an incredibly tragic thing to happen to a child.
Hmm.
So,
yeah, well done. It's not
good,
not
good cause. You can't say anything
no.
else about that without getting too far down strange roads.
Yeah.
So, if you, there's no website for it that we know of, is there?
No, there is one, but I can't remember what it is.
Well, you can Google it.
Children with AIDS charity. Yeah.
If you'd like to donate some money or something.
Yeah. Oh, the most exciting news this week, though, has been Michelle Keegan quite possibly showing her boobs on Twitter. I told you it was a slow news week.
We were so excited when we found this today. It's like, news, boobgate.
So what happened then?
Well,
last night on Twitter,
this is what she says happened. Somebody that she knows, who's her friend, tweeted a photo of some boobs and then deleted it 6 seconds later.
Yeah.
And so everybody assumed that Michelle Keegan had posted a photograph of her boobs.
Why she would do that,
I don't
know. Of
her naked soapy boobs on Twitter, because celebrities do that from time to time and say it was an accident.
Yeah.
And they don't know how to work their phone.
Yeah.
And we
but
know
she's obviously
that
strenuously denied it afterwards, saying, I'm absolutely going to kill you, to the person who did it. I'm changing my password. Touché. You gave as good as you got.
Winky face.
Twitter's going crazy. Sorry to disappoint, guys, but they're not mine. Ha 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 ha.
Brilliant. Hashtag brilliant. Kiss.
I think she doth protest too much. I don't know whether they're actually, they were
I
hers
don't
or not.
I don't think that they are hers, because this person was not listed as her love interest or friend. She has, or boyfriend. She has another boyfriend. I've forgotten his name, but it wasn't the person they're talking about.
Yeah.
So why he would have a photo of her?
Was it
here?
Boobs. I thought it was a girl.
Or why she would? It doesn't make any difference. I don't think it was her boobs.
No,
seen the boobs.
I had to do, for the purposes of the podcast, I've had to do some quite thorough investigative journalism.
And how did you decide to go about
it? I looked on the Sun website, and they did have them.
And did you have a photo of Michelle Keegan to just compare?
No, I've got an imagination.
You just remembered what she looked like.
Yeah, so I don't think that they're hers.
Well, she's not the only person who doesn't seem to quite grasp how to use social media, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Go on then. Helen Flanagan. She's not been stupid this week. She's actually got a job.
She's got a role in a film called Bitch.
Yeah, which is a drama based on a real life story about bullying. She says, it's really gritty and it's terrible actually, because it's based on a true story.
She's also told Star Magazine this week that she's been living off crisps.
Yeah, but she's starting a diet. Yeah, she posted a picture of herself eating a strawberry or something. So yeah, thrilling news there from the Helen Flanagan camp.
You shouldn't eat strawberries, they're goitrogenic.
Oh dear. In other casting news, Catherine Kelly's won a role in a 3-part crime drama called The Guilty, which is set in both 2008
what
and the present day.
Period.
Yeah, it's about a boy who goes missing and whose body is discovered 5 years later, so I'm sure it'll be full of laughs.
Yeah, it'll be a bundle of fun.
She was really, really good in Miss Selfridge, although when I watched...
Her accent was weird.
Yeah, when I watched it, I did kind of think, this is just Becky putting on a posh voice.
Yeah, when are they going to discover that she's actually just a chap from Manchester?
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see whether she can take on other roles as well. I'm sure she'll be up to it, but I don't think I'll be watching it.
No.
Yeah.
It's not the sort of thing we normally watch, is it?
Not really. There's too many crime dramas on ITV, and they're all a bit boring.
You don't watch anything but The Bill, and they've cancelled it.
Yeah. So that's the news this week. Sorry it's not been that exciting, but, you know.
Hey, what can we do?
Yeah. Make our own news.
They only report what the news said. Yeah, we're going to go around taking photos and say, oh, look, it's Ken Barlow's bomb.
He's been out of the headlines this week, hasn't he?
He's been told to shut up by somebody. Right, so, on to feedback. Our feedback section starts off with some negative feedback.
I can't believe we got some negative feedback.
It's our first bad comment.
Yeah, but we had one of our listeners, Michelle, recommended this person to us and she didn't like us.
We're not quite sure that Christine knew that she was directing this comment to us.
You want to read it out?
She said, like the concept, but don't like the podcast personalities.
Oh.
Too much talk about nothing. Get to the meat and potatoes. It's like listening to some radio stations where DJs talk more than play music. Thanks anyway, Michelle. Yeah, thanks, Michelle.
We encourage everyone to spread the message about the podcast.
I can't believe she thinks we talk too much about nothing.
We do a little bit.
How dare you?
I think sometimes in the street talk, we just kind of say a bit too much about what happened and we don't give our opinions enough.
I'm not going to change.
Well, I think we're quite good.
I don't think we should read too much into this. I think Christine just didn't like us. That's fine, Christine.
Yeah.
Don't download us again.
Yeah, and anyway, we're not going to waffle on for too much because we're seriously running out of web space and these 1 hour, 40 minute episodes that we've had.
Yeah, so you win this time, Christine, but next time we'll be talking for even longer. So, we also asked people about April Fools. And who have you enjoyed laughing at the most?
Yeah, I was kind of wanting people to talk about kind of the buffoonish characters, like the Reg Holdsworths or the Kirks or whatever. But we got some quite interesting answers. Dee said that she quite enjoyed laughing at Gail. Gail has definitely had her moments. During a past podcast, you described her as looking like a lizard in one scene. I remember that.
She does.
I was drinking tea, and as I listened to that podcast, and it always ended up in my laptop because the comment made me laugh out loud.
Yeah, Christine.
Yeah, Gail is turning slowly into a comedy character, isn't she? I don't really like it, but
it's funny. We can laugh. Stephen says, I've always laughed with Steve McDonald. His gurnings have made me chuckle at times, and certainly his recent antics with a tortoise have been quite funny. If there was a comedy team award, I'd put him in with Lloyd, as the two can be hysterical at times.
Yeah, Steve is best when he's paired up with someone, though. On his own, he's not that funny.
On his own, he's just a tragic man making faces at nothing.
Yeah. I think it was when they paired him up with Cara McDonald that they really realised his and her comic potential.
Mm-hmm.
He's hilarious.
Who else is funny? Norris, obviously, is hilarious with Mary.
Yeah, although Norris is a bit too much of a kind of a nasty old man at times, isn't he?
Yeah, but he does progress a lot of plots by listening in and running off and telling other people.
Yeah.
And Kirk, obviously, is always good for a laugh. Kirk and Beth at the moment,
I don't like Kirk and Beth.
Don't you?
I just don't really like Beth. I don't know whether she's too much of a Scylla wannabe or what. But
oh, I know what you mean, I guess, yeah.
Well, Kirk's funniest when he's on his own, I think. And he just says these stupid things in the middle of somebody else's conversation.
But yeah, obviously, Corey is comedy gold. Is a comedy gold mine.
I did like Reg Holdsworth when he was back in it, although we don't really like Ken Morley from what we've seen of him. You remember that Come Dine With Me with Ken Morley on?
He was weird.
Yeah. I'll tell you who else I liked that was a bit buffoonish. Graham, a few years ago. He was...
Oh, Graham! I liked Graham.
Graham Proctor.
He went off with Sheen.
Yeah.
Oh, come back, Graham. He was awesome. Yeah, I liked him. He was
stupid but wise.
He knew, like, he was in on the joke.
Yeah.
I liked him.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go, some funny characters.
Yeah.
And then we asked, will we see Kirsty again?
Yeah, because, I mean, they've definitely left the door open for her if they do decide that she wants to come back. Stephen said, I fully expect the return of Kirsty within the next 2 years to cause all sorts of havoc with Ty and Fizz. Whereas Claire said, yes, I don't think the street has seen the last of Kirsty. A leopard doesn't change its spots to see another Ruby kidnapping in our future.
I would be so happy if she came back.
Mm. I don't know whether it's going to be in the next 2 years or whether it'll be when Ruby's a bit older. I think probably Natalie will want to go off and try her hand at proper acting for a good few years before she comes back to Corrie, if she ever does come back.
I certainly would like to see her. But yeah, I do think it'd be more interesting if she came back when Ruby's a bit older.
Yeah. Do you think she would come back as a villain, or would they try and...
No. It depends on what crazy producer that is in and how they want to make a name for themselves. But I think it would be an absolute tragedy to bring her back as a reformed character.
Do you think?
Yeah, because she's awesome as a villain.
But if she's a villain, then she's always going to have a limited lifespan.
Yeah, she'll always
have
a limited run. But it's like Terry Duckworth, where she'd pop up and cause mayhem and then
that could be quite good.
Or Liz's husband.
Oh, like Jim, yeah, because he was in and out quite a lot, wasn't he? So maybe we'll get
that. It sound like I've never watched the show before. When I'm watching Coronation Street, to take notes, I have to keep saying to you, who's that? Who's that? I don't remember anyone's names. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, so maybe she'll be back. I don't know.
Maybe I've been having too many special brownies. It does cause memory loss.
If she does come back and they don't resolve the issue between her mum and her dad, I'll be very cross. Yeah.
They won't
bring them
back.
What I don't want to happen, and it's perfectly possible, is for her to come back and then Tyrone to start developing feelings for her again.
Oh, no, please. Don't have any romances surrounding her. No. She's better just beating people with hoovers.
Yeah. Unless if she came back and had a romance with someone else, like her and Rob or something.
Oh, God. Hopefully she'd kill him.
Oh, yeah. So
if you have any opinions on any of the things we've spoken about today, unless you have a negative opinion, in which case just paste it on Facebook for anyone else to read, you can email us at conversationstreet@gmail.com.
Yeah.
You can visit our website at www.conversationstreet.podbean.com. You can search for us on iTunes and leave a review. You can find us on Twitter at conversationstreet, or you can search for us on Facebook, Conversation Street.
Yeah. So that is it for another week. We'll be back next time with more Corrie stuff, a classic character profile, and
who knows
maybe some more news about something more exciting than
maybe a different body part on Twitter this time. Yeah. We can only hope.
Yeah, maybe it will be Ken Barlow's bum.
We've got to get that out there.
See you next time.
Bye.
The music for this episode was provided by podcastthemes.com.